And good morning. This is Computer Talk with Tab. I'm Eric.
And I'm Dennis.
And we're going to be here until 11 o'clock. Dennis is driving the ship again, the bus or whatever you want to call it. And I am in an undisclosed location. happy to help you guys out with your computer calls, comments, questions, and concerns. Get online if you can. 860-522-9842 is the number. And we will do our best to help you out with your comments, questions, and concerns when it comes to technology. And as usual and customary, we have some doozies of some news stories here. But they're actually, it's like, it's all been done before kind of thing, right, Dennis?
It is.
The Allbirds folks, right?
Yeah, none of this is really surprising, but it's still a surprise. It's funny how things work that way.
Yeah.
The item that I had was the Allbirds company. Which I had never heard of before.
Me neither. You had to be in Silicon Valley to actually hear about them.
Apparently, they were very much in fashion out in Silicon Valley. They made sneakers out of merino wool, if you can believe that. And they are very expensive. Mm-hmm. But apparently, they were the go-to sneaker for anybody that worked out there.
Really?
For years, apparently. I mean, this goes back to, what, 2010 or something like that?
Okay, they've been around that long. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. It's not just a new thing. However, just this year, they have decided to pivot their entire business.
Yes.
They are dumping sneakers altogether. These sneakers that were high fashion, that were being bought up, stores were being emptied of their shelves of these things, okay? Mm-hmm. At one point, they are dumping that entire product line and going into the AI business. And when they made that announcement, guess what happened to their stock price? It shot right up.
600% it went up in no time the moment they said that they were going to deal with AI.
Right.
And this is very, go ahead, very, very reminiscent of...
Long Island Iced Tea, an iced tea company that continued to make iced tea. This is not exactly the same as what Allbirds is doing, but similar. Mm-hmm. They sold iced tea, but then they named themselves Blockchain Tea.
Right.
And suddenly their interest in their product went up. I don't know if they are a stock traded company, but... they, you know, suddenly their business became interesting to people in ways that it never was before just because of the name change. Nothing else, just the name.
Just the name. And they're saying here this sneaker company is going to get into the AI infrastructure business. These people have no background, no experience. They just said they're going to do it. And everyone's dumping all sorts of money into this stock. All I need to say is Bitcoin.
Well,
it's the same idea, guys.
And it's also reminiscent of the 2000 era where all kinds of online stocks were just being vacuumed up by whoever for no other reason than a company had an online presence.
Now,
anybody remember pets.com?
I heard about them, yeah. Everyone lost their shirt.
Yeah, I mean, they're gone.
So the other thing, too, about this is the long blockchain is what the iced tea company was called. The SEC delisted it in February of 2021 and charged three people connected with insider trading. Obviously, they knew they were going to announce that they were going to be a quote-unquote blockchain, and they knew enough ding-a-lings out there would be like, what, blockchain? I heard that's good. Would dump money into it. Here's the same idea. I don't know if I could. It's really hard to predict that this sneaker company is going to have a similar outcome. I really don't know that I would invest my future in a sneaker company that then becomes an AI company. Now, Dennis, I don't know. Maybe we should just add Computer Talk with Tab AI, and you and I would just be bazillionaires, right?
Yeah, we should. We should create our own AI model.
Just stating it. We don't have to actually create anything.
Right.
Because Newbird AI hasn't created anything.
Allbirds.
Allbirds is what they are, but their new name is going to be Allbird.
Yeah, or...
It's going from Newbird to Allbird AI. That's their new... Allbird is becoming Newbird AI.
Newbird AI. Right.
Yeah. And all we have to do is just add AI to our name, and we are good. let's just do it, man. So do you remember the story I had a couple weeks ago about the naval ship that was out there that was not tracked because of somebody
because of
using
fitness apps on somebody's phone?
Correct.
On board.
The yeah. Charles de Gaulle was the actual ship. It was a French ship that was tracked using that fitness app. Now, well, this is an even, I'm going to say it, dumber way to have your naval ship tracked. So basically, a researcher simply went online, and there's literally information by the Dutch Navy that explains how you can send correspondence to naval shipmen.
Okay.
And the broadcaster said to himself, okay, I'm going to go ahead and... They literally gave you all the information. They also said, by the way, we don't x-ray this stuff. They said that. They're like, in the actual instructions, they say, by the way, we're not going to x-ray what you send. So he's like, you know what? What I'm going to do here is I'm going to send a Bluetooth tracker in a form of a greeting card that has a battery in it. And if you've ever opened those silly greeting cards that, you know, make noises and laugh at you or what have you. So he's like, okay, I'm going to see what happens. So he sent a postcard on the ship with a battery on it there that's included, had the Bluetooth tracker, and they were able to detect where this frigate was located.
Oh, no.
Yeah. I don't understand all the energy and time that company. And the reason it really bothers me, not only for just the stupidity of it, but Dennis and I are involved in having to protect our manufacturing clients here in Connecticut with something called CMMC 2.0.
Right.
We have to implement technologies and security practices based on that framework so that a manufacturer here in Connecticut that might be making a part for a howitzer, literally a part that if you looked at it, you would have no idea what it was for.
Mm-hmm.
But we have to have them go through hundreds of thousands of dollars of protections and security practices, which are all good things they should do anyways, but that's the harder part to get somebody to go ahead and go through all that.
Yeah.
But they are mandated to do it. They have to have something called a SPAR score so that the primes, the Pratt & Whitney's, the Electric Boats, the Lockheed Martins, can send them work so they can go ahead and make this howitzer part. And then you have a ding-dong in the Dutch military who, via just a Bluetooth tracker on the actual weapon itself, right, the whole frigate,
right,
is being tracked. It's like, shoot me now. Again, just shoot me now. It is mind-boggling. And the fact that they actually gave full instructions, the Dutch Armed Forces post full instructions online, freely available open source intelligence data, and it was all he did was follow the instructions, knew they weren't going to x-ray this thing, and now they're going to go ahead and change their policies. Well, that's good to know.
Yeah, but they're closing the barn door after the horses got out.
Right. I guess would they have done that? I mean, did you have to get sunk to do it? But, I mean, this is crazy. That's the idea of this stuff. I mean, we're spending so much energy trying to protect what we're trying to protect here just in manufacturing, and then these ding-dongs, shoot me now, I'm over here.
Well, and in addition to that, I've had relatives that were on board naval ships, and you know, we're given instructions about how to reach them if we need to,
mm-hmm.
but it's all very specific, and none of it is publicly known, and you're not told until, you know, somebody's actually deployed.
Right.
And, you know, when they're not deployed, then the advice goes away. So having this all information just on a website for anyone in the world to get just sounds insane to me, just right off the bat.
It is pretty nuts. I have another story for you that I found interesting. There's a company out there, or an organization, I should say, that it's called Good Jobs First, and they are putting out a story about many U.S. states and local authorities that are violating generally accepted accounting principles. Now, for me to say a legislature or a government would violate general accepted accounting principles really is not news, right? I mean, obviously that's what they do every day,
right?
Or our taxes wouldn't be as bad as they are. But I digress. Many U.S. states and local authorities are violating general accepted accounting principles by failing to disclose revenue lost to data center tax subsidy schemes. So according to Good Jobs First, these states are major states that are not reporting on the billions of lost revenue because they gave these people sweet tax abatement deals. And 14 states that are failing to disclose their tax shortfalls due to server farms. So, whoa. Yeah, but again, a legislature or a government not using generally accepted accounting principles is nothing new, right?
Nope.
Even in the state of Connecticut, I remember Daniel P. saying, we're going to go to GAAP rules,
GAAP
right?
Accounting, he was supposed to,
yeah. And that still has not happened, I don't think, as of now. No. So even the state of Connecticut talks about it, but they don't even do it here. So in this case, billions are lost to these tax abatements. Three states are losing $1 billion or more, the report finds. Georgia stands at number one, $2.5 billion lost to tax abatements to data centers. Virginia lost $1.9 billion, and Texas lost another billion. So again, if data centers are such a great idea, which I'm not saying they're not.
Well, and we do need some of them. I mean, there's just no question of that.
Well, all good, right? But what ding-dong in these legislatures say, you know what? I know what we're going to do. We're going to give these big data centers $3 billion in tax benefits to come and plop their data center right here, cranking up our electricity costs to our ratepayers, and then making trillions of dollars themselves. But those of us who are paying taxes lose. This is, again, it's like subsidizing a stadium for like baseball or football, billion-dollar industries, and we're the ones subsidizing these places. In this case, $2.5 billion in Georgia. Do you think Georgia could do something with that money versus subsidizing a data center?
Oh, yeah.
And data centers are supposedly going to rake in the cash, so why do we need to do that? It's mind-boggling.
Right. That's the real point. If these companies are making money anyway, why are we giving them tax abatements so that they can make more? Let them just make what they can make, right?
Right. Nobody's given TAB a tax abatement to exist. Heck, no. East Hartford's making it hard for us to even exist. They blocked off our road.
Yeah.
So, I mean, nobody's helping TAB, and nobody has helped TAB for 43 years. But some trillion-dollar data center gets a deal. We're going to have Greg LeRoy from Good Jobs First on the program in early May to talk about this. But it's crazy. Why would we have to subsidize these trillion-dollar industries if data centers are such a great idea? If you've got the infrastructure already in Texas and Virginia, which you do, you shouldn't have to additionally incentivize them to come build their data centers there. And then hide it by not using generally accepted accounting principles to actually show the loss. Just not cool.
That's not cool at all.
So we'll put the links up here to these stories, and we'll do our best to get them to you when we can. Mm-hmm. But with Dennis driving the show.
Yeah, the website links are going to have to wait until a little bit later.
Right. So feel free to get online. 860-522-9842 is the number. And we're happy to help you guys with your computer comments, questions, and concerns. We're here till 11 o'clock. So feel free to get online. Dennis, do you have anybody online now?
We do. We have Will in Southington. And
all right. We'll get to Will after the quick break here, though, okay?
Yeah.
All right, we'll be right back.
And we are back.
Oh, sorry, Dennis.
That's okay.
Didn't want to step on you. You go ahead and do your thing.
I'm actually driving here.
Yeah,
wow.
Yeah, you go. You
amazing.
Go, kid. My fault.
We have a call on the line. As I mentioned before, Will from Southington. Let's go to him.
Sounds good.
Will, are you aboard?
I am. Good morning, fellas.
Hey, this thing actually works.
Sometimes it's better than my computer.
Well, it's the guy behind the board that's or yeah, in front right. of it. Go ahead.
Listen, I have... I have Microsoft Excel, the office. I rent it through the Best Buy deal, so supposedly my office is always updated with the new things each year. Mm-hmm. And they just recently doubled their price, as you guys mentioned, I think, about 5 months ago. Anyway, I cannot delete files off my Excel. I have read the website, do this, do that, I do that. The only thing I finally did was wipe out all the data in it, and now what happens is a blank screen comes up alongside the good screen sheet, I should say, which is okay, but is there any way to delete files off this Excel?
Well, the question I have for you is, are you keeping these files online, like in OneDrive, or are
they're not
files
in
on your computer?
I called you guys a year ago. Oh. I got OneDrive off my computer.
Gotcha.
First I made them inactive, and then I deleted it.
Okay, so these are files on the computer.
Yep.
You got to find out why you can't delete them. Are they set as read only or something like that? Is it possible?
No, I work on. You know, I learned this from Lotus 1-2-3 years ago. I tell you, they keep changing Excel, adding more bells and whistles, and it's just baloney because all it does is make these things do things you don't want to do. Sometimes they seem to do it by themselves. Yeah. No, it's all on my computer as far as I know.
All right, that's fair. I also wonder if they might still be open. And what you might want to do is find a utility that will look at open file handles. The utility that I use for that is called Process Explorer, and it's available from Microsoft. It's part of something called SysInternals, and you can download this utility and run it on your computer. It has
Process Explorer, is that what I look for?
That is it. If you... You shouldn't search for it on the internet. We'll get a link to it that you can go to and get it. However, once you run it, it has at the top a very useful search tool. It's a little magnifying glass icon. And you can click either all or part of the file name that you're trying to delete. And it will search through all the active file handles on the computer, and it will tell you exactly which process has it open. Then you can use the same utility to kill the process.
Oh my God.
And once you've killed that task, then you should be able to delete the file.
Why do you suppose Microsoft has made it so difficult?
Well, that's an idea. Dennis's approach is an idea. Another thing is that, according to what I'm looking at here, there you could just have a file that's kind of stuck in the file repair process. Microsoft, tries to fix damaged files while you're using them, and it can be stuck. So from what I'm seeing here, if you try to rename the file, save it, and then try to delete it, that might work. But basically, that is the approach, is that you have this stuck file repaired status on the file, and that's why it may not be deletable either.
Okay.
So there's a couple approaches you can take.
Okay. All right. Appreciate it as usual. You guys do a great job. Thanks very much.
Our pleasure. Good luck.
Take care.
Yep. The key of this stuff is, Dennis, is it is frustrating, right? And this is the odd stuff that happens with these operating systems. They're trying to help. And this does happen where there's quote unquote corruption that we call it in the IT world of some kind, and it just gets stuck or it gets confused. It doesn't know what to do because the file is damaged in some sort of way and it's not able to deal with it. So that's what I'm seeing here based on some of the folks that are out there. But your approach can work too, I guess.
Yeah, that was just what occurred to me initially. Because I've used that tactic probably a couple hundred times in my career. So
wow.
Yeah.
All right. So any other calls to talk about?
Well, we don't have any calls ready to come on board at the moment, but I did want to mention some guidance that CISA issued recently.
Sure.
About an exploit in Excel.
Yeah.
But it's an exploit from old versions of Excel that was patched by Microsoft in 2009.
And they just sent out the notice because people are still using
no. I mean, notice had been made in 2009.
Okay.
But for some reason, CISA issued a new guidance about it, basically telling people to update their software. But I wonder why 17-year-old software is still being used, apparently, that was unpatched 17 years ago.
Well, and that's the thing, right? And CISA feels it's so important that somebody's hacking it, so... we'll post the link. So if the moral of the story, you're running old software, it's probably not getting updated. Maybe you want to update your software to protect yourself.
And we are going to have to take a break. We have Adam and Larry on the line, and we'll pick you up after the news. And we are back with Eddie Money.
So, yeah, we're ready to rock and roll, help you out with your computer problems, comments, questions, and concerns. The number is 860-522-9842. Feel free to get online. We're here till 11 o'clock. And then Morgan Cunningham at 11 will have a spotlight that I'm sure is going to be cool as always. His show is very informative, so stick around for that at 11 o'clock. But for right now, what do you got going on there on the phones there, Dennis?
We have Adam on the line from the home of Tab Computers, East Hartford.
All right.
Gentlemen, I appreciate listening to the show, and I appreciate you taking my call. I'm a veteran, well, I'm not disabled from military activity, but I am a veteran that's disabled. I have some light sensitivity and headaches, and a little bit of a fatigue. But what I called about, though, is you guys are very helpful, and I enjoy the program. And I got another one of those. This time, I don't know if you can tell me if someone's trying to hack me. Remember I told you about that lady named Mary from near Rhinebeck, New York, that was hacked?
Hmm. Doesn't ring a bell right now, but keep going. What's your question?
Well, a couple weeks ago, I told you about a I wouldn't click on it, and somebody I hadn't heard from in 10 years said open this up. Oh, well, I just got this.
Yeah,
I just got this email yesterday. I put it in the trash, and I'll double put it in the trash, but it says, RE, thank you for the order by capital BGS, JTE, with a couple of junk and then a paper clip. You don't want to click on that, right, brother?
No. Correct. No.
I never ordered anything from Brittany Ferguson.
Right.
No, you didn't. If you do have any a lot of these are, obviously fake. I mean, once in a great while, I'll get an invoice from PayPal. I have a PayPal account. People can submit invoices to me through it. And, I don't have to pay it because I don't know who they are. Usually I report the invoice as, fake, and they pull it. But there are different ways that things like this can get sent to you. And really, you just got to ignore it. And if you do have a question about it, go to either the credit card that's mentioned, if there is one, or go to the service such as PayPal or whatever it might be, and you can use whatever contact you normally would use to check that service. Don't use any links in the email. Check it out and see what the story is behind it if you really feel like investigating it. But I wouldn't even bother.
Mm-mm.
No.
Yeah, I just doubled because I go to the Wheeler Clinic in Hartford for my doctor's visits. And usually when I get a receipt from them that if I paid there with a credit card, they'll email it to me, but it'll say Wheeler Clinic on it.
Right.
So this one here, I'm glad I didn't open this doggone thing,
Yeah.
It's unfortunate that you have to distrust everything that comes into your email these days, but that's just the reality of it. Unfortunately.
Well, one thing I won't do, I learned from you guys on the show, if you get something from somebody you hadn't heard from in 10 years, and it says, click on this, don't do it.
Oh, yeah.
Don't do it. Even if you've heard from them yesterday, don't do it. My own kids don't even click on the links I send them because they say, I'm not clicking on anything, Dad. I don't trust you.
Yeah. All right, guys. I'll keep listening to the show and have a great day, all right?
Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
All right. So he's going to go off and delete some invoices. What do you got next?
We have Larry from Middletown. Larry, are you there?
Good morning, all. Larry from Middlefield.
Middlefield. I'm sorry. I apologize.
No, maybe I said maybe.
No, you said Middlefield. I read the wrong name off. I'm sorry.
That's all right. I used to live in Middletown. I had a good discussion with a good friend of mine, VA, ham radio. We chat, and we were talking about internet speed, and I said, well, my newer computers I can select 2.5 or 5 gigahertz going to Wi-Fi, going to my router.
Right.
And I, my internet, he says I'm only getting, he's getting like 200 and something megabytes on his internet speed. I don't know how he's got it set up, if he's wired in or he's using Wi-Fi to his router, but I'm with Comcast over copper still.
Mm-hmm.
So after the discussion, I did a speedtest.net, and of course it was pinging to Boston.
Right.
And I'm getting about 500 megabytes up and down. And I told him that I thought the card and the computer was just the gigahertz between the computer and the router, but not what I'm getting on the internet.
Well, there's two things at play. 5 gigahertz is designed for close Wi-Fi interfaces and typically is faster. You can get about a gigabit of speed using 5 gigahertz Wi-Fi. That's only going to be communicating, though, from your laptop to the actual router itself. That's that speed connection. It has nothing to do with your internet. All right?
Right. That's what I thought.
And right. 2.4 is going to be a longer range type of configuration, a little slower speeds, and great for long distances. So 5G is a little more sensitive to being, has to be closer to get those performances, and 2.4 further away. So that's just your communication. Your internet speed is whatever you're paying for from your internet provider. So even if you could get a gigabit speed between your 5 gigahertz laptop and your router, if your internet provider is only offering you 200 megabits, there's nothing you can do to make that faster. Unless
right.
you pay for it.
It's just like radio. The lower the frequency, the longer the distance.
That's true on those types of, on those communications, yes, but not in the bandwidth.
It's true with the internet, the router, and the computer. Same thing.
Right. So the internet, think of the internet though as like a water pipe. You have a 1-inch main coming into your home, and that's going to deliver X number of gallons, right, per minute. If you put in a 12-inch main, well, that's going to give you a whole lot more, but you need to pay for that 12-inch main. So that's the difference here with the internet too. So your internet speed has no connectivity to your internal network speed. But your internal network speed has to be up to snuff to be able to take advantage of the expensive bandwidth you might have paid for that 12-inch main. You would have to upgrade all your pipes in your home to 12-inch pipes to take full advantage of that 12-inch main. Sort of. I'm sure there's physics that I'm wrong about, but you get the gist.
Well, like I told them, between the internet, I mean the computer and the router, I selectivity 2.5 or 5, and my actual internet, I did the speedtest.net, and I was getting about 500 megabytes.
Yeah, do you pay for 500? Okay, you don't pay for any more then. You're getting what you're paying for, or do you pay for gigabit internet?
I'd have to go into my account. I don't believe I am over copper here. I've been here 10 years with Comcast, and I'm not sure over copper. They keep solicitations all the time with the Wi-Fi, wanting me. Now you can do Wi-Fi and have it with the phone and all that. I got enough Wi-Fi here between the router and all the computers in the house.
Exactly.
Yeah,
you're good.
It's just the rest from here going out is copper.
Right.
Through Comcast until I upgrade.
Yeah, it'll be copper and it probably has a ceiling of 500 megabits because I don't think broadband cable internet can go much faster than that at all over the right. coax medium.
Right. That's what I thought. So the moral of the story is what I told them is what you and I were on the same page, but I just wanted to check with you. And I listened to your show all these years, and I'm going to get him on Facebook and have him listen to the podcast or whatever. So
sounds good.
Yeah.
One of these days, I am going to upgrade. I just haven't decided yet.
Well, you may not need to, Larry. I mean, how many people are in your home?
Just me.
You're fine and, if I'm
Yeah, you're going to be well served by what you've got.
Yeah, don't even bother changing.
Yeah. Not unless you can get a lower price.
Well, that's true. That's true.
Yeah. They keep wanting to sell me more.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, you don't need more. God.
Right. All right. Well, that's the moral of the story then. And when I talk to him, next time I talk to my friend there.
Sounds good.
That what I was talking to him about is right.
Yep. You are on track.
Right. All right. Thanks.
Thank you, Larry.
All right. And next up, we have Jack from Glastonbury. If we can.
Morning, Jack.
Hey, how you guys doing today?
Good. How are you?
Good. Listen, I've got a question. I'm using Outlook, and I've been a longtime user, so I'm pretty familiar with it. But one of the problems I have with this computer, the C drive, it's the hard drive is partitioned into a C and a D. And the C drive is where all the system stuff is, and the D drive is where where I keep all my user stuff and all that kind of things. Mm-hmm. And I, because of the problems I've had with the C drive getting too overloaded and too filled up, mm-hmm. my habit now is to, like, if I'm creating a new program or loading a new program, I change the path to be on the D drive. Okay.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. All right. So. But the other day I got a message that the C drive was getting too big, and so I had to clean it up, you know. And the problem I have is Outlook, you know, has that backbone where you can create different little folders on the backbone. And then in addition to that, you can create your own PST files, and they'll show up further down on the backbone as folders. So I've been using that strategy and putting the PST files on my D drive so that I don't use up the C drive space. Mm-hmm. But there are two files that are out there. One is called Archive and the other is called Outlook. And those two are on my C drive. The Archive, I've been using that because as I understand it, Outlook just moves old stuff over to the Archive and keeps your, regular, kind of cleans up the backbone, so to speak. And, so I've been using that. It seems to work good. The only thing that I noticed is that, and I guess this is intentional, if you've got a folder on that backbone and you haven't put anything in it for a while, the information disappears, but it seems to show up when you go to the Archive. Mm-hmm. So I think that's a safety measure that's good that it keeps all the information that I want to keep. But my question is, what I'd like to do is move the Archive and the Outlook PSTs off of the C drive over to the D drive.
Sure.
My way of doing it is just to move them over there and then reload Outlook and see if it works, that kind of strategy. And if it doesn't work, put them back on the C drive.
Well, I'll leave it to Dennis because he probably deals with this often, but you don't have to approach it that way.
Okay.
So go ahead, Dennis. Do you have any
well,
instructions?
There are ways to manually relocate all of your PSTs if you want mm-hmm. to. Essentially, what you're going to do is find out where they are now on your C drive, put them somewhere on the D drive,
Right.
But move them, don't just copy them. And then launch Outlook, and it should tell you that it couldn't find the file. And when it does that, it'll give you an opportunity to tell it where the file now is. And okay. Then it'll continue to use it.
Yep.
In its new location.
That sounds very easy. I give that a shot. And if it doesn't work.
And if you're the one caution I'm going to give you is if you're moving more than one, and you are, only move one at a time. You don't want to invoke kind of a double situation where you're asking Outlook to manage two different moved files, because conceivably they could get confused between which one you're relocating. So move one file and then reopen Outlook, have it relocate the file, and then let Outlook settle with that. Then close it again and move the other file.
Yeah, that makes sense. I understand that. So that will work out great for me. I have one other question. It's totally unrelated, but it you guys may be able to answer it. I've gone to GoNet Speed. I've been on GoNet Speed for a long time now, a couple of years or so. And when they hooked me up, you know, they use their own fiber optic cable.
Right.
And I had Frontier DSL for a long time, so I had their cable. Both of these cables are going across the street from a telephone pole over to my house way up high, you know, so I'm not going to get up on a ladder or anything like that, but mm-hmm. I want Frontier to remove their cable from my house, but they're saying they won't do it.
Yeah, that's interesting. I don't know why they would force that, but go ahead, Dennis.
I was going to say, I don't know why they wouldn't. I mean, the less footage of cable that they have out in the world, the happier they're going to be. So I don't know why they would want to.
Well, they probably want to use the old copper as a pole line if they ever get a fiber person in there to use their fiber. I don't know.
Maybe.
But, I mean, I wouldn't worry about it too much as far as having it connected or not. You could disconnect it on your end, on your house itself, but I wouldn't recommend that either. I've been admonished by a few callers by even suggesting I was going to do the same thing with my cable service. Now, when I got Cox, I think it was many years ago, they themselves took out the SNET line that was connected. They're like, oh, you're not going to need this. So, you know, these incumbents and were battling back and forth way back in the 90s for access to your system. And they're like, oh, we're going to disconnect this. You're not going to need it. So in the old days, they would do that. But I guess now probably just leave it running. We do have to step out for a break. I'm sure Matt's screaming over there at you, Dennis.
Yeah.
So hopefully that helps you. I tell you to leave that line alone.
Oh, it looks like he's gone already. Okay.
Oh, very good.
And we are going to take a break. And we are back.
Ooh. Hey, Dennis, do you recall last year an unwelcome update to Server 2025 that occurred, where basically servers that were running let's say Server 2022, were automatically upgraded to Server 2025, even though the administrators didn't ask about it.
I do remember that. I do.
So, just so you know.
No, it didn't happen again.
No,
is that it?
No. I mean, the issue emerged in 2024, actually, and Microsoft just recently marked it as resolved. So, I mean... Basically, your server would be automatically updated from a version that you weren't prepared to go to, and caused all sorts of havoc for all sorts of administrators.
Oh, yeah.
And the update that was sent out back in 2024 was listed as some sort of optional installation, but Microsoft was blaming third-party patching and software packages that were seeing that optional installation as something that had to happen.
And forcing them through.
Huh. Yeah. And now, of course, some people would say we didn't even have any third-party products and it still went ahead and updated. So they are now marking this as resolved. Now, this is in a year where Microsoft is finally promising to put out better quality software. And there's many folks out there in government. I think, what's his name there out there? The guy out in Washington State, I'm sure, is on this too.
Senator Wyden.
Yeah. Talking about the quality of Microsoft software. I mean, there's no warranty on this stuff. And if you're running a business with, let's say, 2022 servers that all get updated to 2025 without your asking them to, that's quite a mess.
Oh, yeah.
And so this type of thing where Microsoft is promising to be better at providing better quality software is just another example of how bad Microsoft is when it comes to this type of stuff. To market this many years later as finally, quote-unquote, resolved is unacceptable. You just can't run a business knowing that that's how the software is sitting out there. You're just waiting for it to update on you someday and blow everything up. Hopefully they're going to improve things, but...
Well, I don't know if you remember the workstation Windows update that went out that modified the boot record or boot sector, and it failed on a lot of computers because by default they were set up with too little space to allow this update to be added.
Right, right.
And Microsoft just decided that they weren't going to fix it. Mm-hmm. And I think we've got to head on out and go for a news break.
Sounds good.